We're holding on Pei Aleph Amud Bey's 12 lines from the bottom by the two dots. We said in the Mishnah, we mentioned in the Mishnah that a man is allowed to be in Yichud with his mother, a father with his daughter, and the Mishnah had also said that a father with his young daughter or a mother with her young son are allowed to sleep together in one bed with skin-to-skin contact until, the Mishnah says, Higdilu, once the children get older, then we said, Zei Yashin B'Ksusei V'Chola, then they can still lie in the same bed, but they each have to be wearing their clothing. So the Gemara says, V'Kama, at what age is the child considered old enough that they can't sleep with their parent with skin-to-skin contact? Amar of Adar, Bar of Aza, Amar of Asi, Tinoikis Bas Teisha Shonim Yemechad, for a girl it would be when she reaches 9 years old, Tinik Ben Shtemes Yashonim Yemechad, and for a boy when he reaches 12. That's the goose that we have in front of us over here. On the other hand, Agoris Habach brings from the Rosh, who says that actually it should really be, according to this first gear, that when a girl is 3 and a boy is 9. Anyway, another version is, another version is a girl when she's 12, a boy when he's 13. According to the Rosh's gear, the second one would be a girl at 11, a boy at 12. Either way, the zevazeh, in either case, whichever set of ages we're talking about, according to either version, kadesha yir shadayim nachonu sa'orich tzimeah. We're talking about the age when, to use the expression from the pasuk, where Yechezkel uses this in a metaphor to describe the growth and development of the Jewish people, we say it in the Haggadah, your breasts fashion and your hair grow. In other words, only when there's physical development, then we'll say, so for a girl, we're talking about at 9 or at 12, according to the different gear size, then we're talking about that, when is there a problem? Only when, in addition to that age, also she's reached the stage of physical development. Now, usually we say that shtei sidus that grow on a girl before 12 or a boy before 13 are not considered to have any significance in halacha. They're usually just called a shuma. They're called like as if it was a wart that grew hair, or like a mole that grew hair. But here, according to the first version, once she's 9, once the girl is 9 and the boy is 12, then if they develop shtei sidus and other signs of physical maturity, then it shows that they're already old enough to not be sleeping with the skin-to-skin contact with the parent of the opposite gender. So you have different gerusolos over here, and you have different explanations. But whatever the case, the point is that once they reach that stage of development, then you can't do that anymore. And Omer Rafram Baba Papa, Omer Rafram Baba Papa, Omer Rav Chista, Lo Shonu Ela Sheina Boisha Lam in the front of Arun. Furthermore, that would only apply only if she's not embarrassed to stand undressed in front of him. So the mother when a mother doesn't mind being undressed in front of him. Similarly with a girl with her father when they're at very young ages. Aval boishal am the fun of then you can have the sleeping together with skin to skin contact. Aval boishal am the fun of arum. But if she has already reached the stage, or he has already reached the stage where she's embarrassed to stand undressed in front of him, also, then it would be also, even if they're below these ages, and even if they're below the stage of physical development, my time, why is that Yetzer Albusha? Because at that point, you see the Yetzer is already enclosing her. In other words, we see from that embarrassment that already they have a certain awareness of what Bia is, and therefore that they're embarrassed to be that way. So then in that case, once that point is reached, even if the child is below the ages we were saying before, and even if they're not yet at the stage of physical development that we mentioned, then still you wouldn't be allowed to sleep with that skin-to-skin contact anymore. So the Gemara continues in this connection with the story. Rav Acha bar Abba ikol lebeit of Chista Chasne. Rav Acha bar Abba, or it says on the side over here, Rav Chanan bar Rava, ikol lebeit of Chista Chasne, he visited the house of his son-in-law of Chista. Shakle the Bas Brate, he took his granddaughter, which is Rav Chista's daughter, and his own, Rav Acha's granddaughter, Oisvua b'knofe, and he put her in his knofe. So that can mean that he put her, that can mean just that he put her on his lap to sit. On the other hand, Tosfos Riav Zokin says that it means that he was actually gonna sleep with her in a bed with skin to skin contact, like we were saying before. In other words, implying so because she was below age and below that stage of development and whatever. And apparently, in other words, the din that we were saying before about it being allowed with a father would also be allowed with a grandfather, as it is in this case. But Rav Chista says, don't you realize, Rebbe, that she's already Mekudosh? So leaving aside the matter of a daughter or a granddaughter, which fine, there might be a heter for that, like we said before. But in addition, she's an Eshes Ish, and therefore you have more reason that you need to stay away from such an Isser. There's a few different reasons why that is. Is it because, in fact, exactly that? So Rashi says, since she's an Eshes Ish, then you have more reason to stay away from her. Another Tosfos Rid makes a point. He says that, look, once she's already Niskadish, then already you have to consider her like a doula, even though she may be underage, so therefore you can't do this anymore. And another point is also that once she's Niskadish, she already has a certain awareness of what Bia is afterwards, that is what Kiddushin leads to, and therefore that would be a problem. Amalei, sort of Acha tells him, in that case, so you were Mekadish at such a young age, Avarta Lecha Adarav. Well, in that case, then what do you tell you? You're telling me I'm doing something wrong, but fine, you should realize that you've also done something wrong. You were over on what Rav said. The Omer Rav, the Temer of Elazar, we learned this at the beginning of the second parak, back on Daphne and Aleph. Also, La'odim Shikadish is Viti Shikana. A man is not allowed to be Makadish his daughter when she's a Tana. Until she gets old enough to say, I want to marry Pliny. So what are you doing being Makadish her at such an age? So you shouldn't have been Makadish her at that age. Now, we did learn at the beginning of on Daphne and Aleph, when we mentioned that point, that you're not supposed to be Makadish a girl when she's at such a young age, Tosfos mentioned over there that in near times, in the times of the Rishonim, it became common to do Kiddushin even when girls were young. And Tosfos said, because we have Xeris constantly that we have, and you never know if a man might have the means to be Makadish's daughter now and to marry her off now, and he won't have later on, and then she's going to end up being stuck. So Agoris Habak refers to over there, he refers to Or Gemara over here, meaning evidently Rav Chista had similar considerations when he was Makadish, his daughter at such a young age. Anyway, so Rav Chista says to his Shver, Mao Nami Overlay Ad Shmuel, well, you Rebbe also are over on what Shmuel says, the Amash Shmuel in Mishtamshim B'Isha. We learned at the beginning of our parak and the whole story with Rav Yehuda and Rav Nachman and that guy who was Chutzpahdik. We said, that Shmuel said, "Ein mishtamshin b'isha." You're not allowed to use a woman for any personal use at all, like to have her serve you or whatever. We had over there that we have Reb Nachman had offered that his daughter should come and serve them drinks, and Reb Nachman and Reb Yehuda had said nothing doing. So you're using her. Whether it's that she's sitting on your lap, whether it's that you're snuggling with her, how could you do that?
It's both of them, because they're warming each other up and sleeping with her.
Yeah, but that point, whatever the case, it may be they're warming each other up, but nevertheless, you are using her for a purpose, which Shmuel is saying you're not supposed to. Amalei, sort of Acha answers, Anok idach Shmuel svirali. That's true, however, I'm not being over on what Shmuel is saying, because I hold like a different thing that Shmuel says, the same Shmuel, Dorma Shmuel, I call L'shem Shamayim, Shmuel says, everything is L'shem Shamayim. The fact that the Shmuel is saying also L'shamash B'isha, but not when there's any matter, not when you're doing it as chiba of an inappropriate way. There's a reason when you're doing it it's allowed when you're doing it for an appropriate way. In this case, it shows it gives a nachas ruach to her mother to show that I love her daughter and want to be close with her, and therefore, I'm allowed in this case to have her sit on my lap or snuggle with her or whatever. Tosfos says, in fact, with this is what we are soimich, shalom mishtamshin benoshim. The fact is, maisim b'chol yom, you go visit somebody's house, let's say, and the wife serves drinks, or the daughter serves food, or whatever. How are we doing that without being over on Shmuel? This is an example of hakol l'shem shamayim. You're not going to go insult the host by saying, I don't want her to serve me. So therefore, so such things are allowed. So in a similar way over here, so now as far as actual contact, like Rav Acha is having with his granddaughter, that's different. A person has to be on a higher level for that, but
if she's left, doesn't mean she's at rest.
No, so that's the thing. According to the one explanation that we're talking about, she's sitting on his lap. The fact is, there's still, would you be allowed to have a regular woman sit on your lap? No, but in this case, it's his granddaughter. According to the other Tosfos, Riazokin is saying that we're talking about that they're lying together under a blanket with skin to skin contact. Yeah.
People
did use that. Not immediately a matter of survival. In the Holocaust, it was a matter of survival. Yeah. Under normal circumstances, it was a matter of survival. It was a matter of comfort. But.
Because people didn't have clothes.
They had bad blankets or whatever. A person would be colder otherwise. Now he's going to freeze to death. Yeah. Okay. Continue.
We got to get a katana. We lived a whole gemara. A father can be kashrus cut to cow without asking her.
We say he's allowed to, but Rab said he shouldn't. He's allowed to be Mekadosh, or the Torah gives him the ability to be Mekadosh, we've talked about. But as far as what he should do, Rabban said back on Daphne and Aleph, that he shouldn't be Mekadosh until she is old enough to choose her chosen.
She knows what she wants.
That's the point. At that age, she wouldn't. Whatever age we're talking about over here in the story, she evidently wasn't at that age yet. But again, Hagoyis Habach refers over there on Daphne Malik when Tosfos says over there that we do it in their times. Tosfos is talking in their times of the Rishonim. They would do it because you never know what with Xeris. You never know. You might not have another opportunity. So Hagoyis Habach says apparently in this story the same thing was true, and that's why Rafista went and did it. Okay. Mishnah says. More dinim about yichud. Lo yilamed odom ravok sofin. An unmarried man, a ravok, is a bachelor, is not allowed to teach children to teach in a cheder. For reasons that we'll see in the Gemara, v'lo talamed isha sofrim, and a woman, apparently whether she's married or not, should not be teaching children, as we're going to discuss in the Gemara. Why? Rabbi Lozer says, also a man who doesn't have a wife, which on the face of it, that's the same as a Ravok we're going to see in the Gemara, there's a slight difference, should also not be teaching children. Rabbi Yehuda continues and says, an unmarried man should not be grazing animals, because he might have a taiva for it. And two unmarried men should not sleep under one talus, under one blanket, because they might come to Mishkav Zohar. Those two things for an unmarried man to be grazing sheep, as well as for animals in general, and for two men to sleep together under one blanket, as we'll see in the Gemara 1. So the Gemara starts off. This that was saying that an unmarried man should not be teaching children. So my timer, what's the problem? Ilema Mashum Yanuki. Is the problem because he's going to be in Yichud with the children and Wachoshev, there might be Mishkav Zohar, V'hatanya, we learn in a Braisa. In the continuation of the Mishnah, when, again, Rabbi Yehuda says in the next part of the Mishnah that two unmarried men are not allowed to sleep together under one blanket, and the Chachamim say, Omru loy, they told Rabbi Yehuda, Omru loy, Rabbi Yehuda, the Chacham told Rabbi Yehuda, that's not a problem. Lo nechshidu Yisrael on Mishkav Zohar v'loy ala behema. Jews are not suspect about Mishkav Zohar or about bestiality. Now, obviously, if you have an individual person who's choshed on it, then, of course, you have to be careful. But ordinarily, every year, that's a cheskos kashrus and these kinds of things. So that can't be the reason why an unmarried man shouldn't be teaching children, because then the Chachamim should be disagreeing over here as well. Elo Mishum Am Hosta Diyanuki. The reason is because of the mothers of the children who come to drop off and pick up their children. So therefore he might get attracted to them. And in fact, Tosfos Riazokin says, well, then this would only apply to little kids. Once the kids are old enough to be coming to cheder by themselves, there may not be an issue. And similarly, Isha Mishum Av Hosta Diyanuki. And similarly, when it comes to a woman teaching, the problem is because of the fathers of the children who come, where again there might be yichud over there. Which in that case, it comes out that when it comes to a woman, there wouldn't really necessarily be a difference whether she's married or not on the face of it. Now, we did learn before, Baila Ba'ir, that if her husband is in town, there's no issue with yichud. So in fact, Reb Moshe has a couple of truvas on this subject. Lamaisa, you see, in many Jewish schools, they have women teachers teaching the kids, teaching boys even. And he talks about, I mean, so you do have the point of Bible, but first of all, he says, as far as a, like this, we're going to say in the Gemara, Rabbi Lazar is saying that even if the teacher is married, if his wife is out of town, then also that's no good. However, if the wife is Meisim B'chol Yoyim, we see that people are not choshish for that, if a teacher is teaching in a school of a male teacher, even if his wife is out of town for a few days or a few weeks or whatever, they don't, he still teaches during that time. One thing is, of course, you know, our schools are different. It's not in the Malaman's house. You have a lot of people around there. So therefore, he says there's a little...
Kids come by bus.
Kids come by bus. That may also be, but you have parents who come to pick them up and drop them off and occasionally to talk with the teacher and whatever. But still, so he says that as far as women teaching, you know, Lamaisa, you have a number of hakadim for it. He says when it comes to older children, though, then takets, it's really something that should only be done only when it's a real shasat chak. If you really can't find anybody else qualified to teach older boys, then fine, have a woman. But otherwise you really shouldn't. Because then the problem is not so much the parents, then the problem is the boys themselves. every so often you see something in the news where something in a Goyish school where there was something between a teacher and a student, and
expect the person to a rabbi or older rabbi giving a teaching girl the Japanese in the circle.
So that's also right. So as far as
cameras and
right. So then so there are certain attainment, but still. Okay, we said in the mission of laws are in my
schools, you can say that of any profession then, that women and men shouldn't get together.
Well, that's going to be the next mission. We're going to say that a person, you have certain people that are stuck with him on Noshim, where his business puts him in constant contact with women. We're going to give a whole bunch of examples in the next mission and the Gemara on it. But here we're mentioning teaching on the face of it. You could argue, what's the problem? The teacher is a boy, the teacher is a man, the students are boys. But we're pointing out over there, the fact is you do have the parents coming and picking up and dropping off their children and so forth, and then therefore you may have problems. Anyway, the Mishnah continued, Rabbi Lazar and Af Misha'ein Chola. The Chiddush may also be, you know, when you think about it, even though we're talking about teaching the children Torah, you would think it's a great mitzvah. Mela, the next Mishnah, when we talk about various kinds of jobs that a person might have, you could say, okay, so get a different job. You could argue teaching Torah is so important, maybe that should override these Yisurim, and therefore the Mishnah needs to stress to you that not. So the Gemara continues. Rabbi Lazar Omer Af Mi She'ein Chola. Rabbi Lazar had said also a man who has no wife. So what does that mean? Baruch Hu Mi She'ein Lo Isha Klal doesn't mean a man who has no wife at all. So it means, in other words, so the Tanakhama would be talking about a man who was never married. Rabbi Lazar would be talking about a man who was widowed or divorced. Is not allowed to. Or maybe Rabbi Lazar means even if he is right now married, but she's not living with him. So Toshma, Afmi Shiyeshloy, Ve'en Ashruya Etzloy, Lo Yilam Etzofrim, we learn in a Braisa that Rabbi Lazar says that, the Braisa doesn't say Rabbi Lazar, but of necessity it has to be like Rabbi Lazar. Who else would it be? That it means that even if his wife is not living with him right now, then he's also to teach children. And since Rabbi Lazar is the only Tana who says anything similar to that, then it must be that's Rabbi Lazar's opinion, and therefore such a thing would be also as well. They discuss the question, so who is the halacha like? Usually the halacha is like the chachamim against one Tana. On the other hand, here the Gemara goes to the trouble of being mevarer, of clarifying what Rabbi Lazar's opinion is. Maybe that indicates the halacha is like him. Okay.
What's our
boundary? Now, the bottom line is, again, you have to be careful about these things, but there are certain heterim, like we were saying. Lamaisa, you see, for example, teachers in the schools, you don't say, for example, their wife is out of town, they have to take a leave of absence, they still continue teaching. Then we said in the Mishnah, Rabbi Yehuda Amrlo Yirachol, Rabbi Yehuda had said that an unmarried man should not graze animals, and two men shouldn't lie together in one bed. Tanya Amrlo Rabbi Yehuda. So we learn in a Braisa, like we said, they said to Rabbi Yehuda, Lo Nechshir Yisrael Mishkav Zachar V'Layal Behema. Jews are not ordinarily suspect of Mishkav Zachar or bestiality, so a regular Yid has a cheskas kashrus on such things, and you don't have to worry. Obviously, if you see that if a person for himself sees that he has a tendency to such things, you should stay away from them. And also, of course, if he's been caught out on it in the past, then that's different. Okay, Mishnah continues. Kol sha'asak of him anoshim. Anybody who does business with women, And you have, for example, so in other words, he's doing some kind of business that specifically involves women. Perfumes is one example. The Gemara is going to give a whole bunch of examples. Lo yisyachet im anoshim, he is not allowed to be in yichud with women. Now Rashi says that means even with many women, because Rashi, we said at the beginning when we started a couple of days ago learning about the dinim of Yichud, so Rashi had said that ordinarily, we said in the Mishnah, a man can't be with two women, but Rashi had learned it would be perfectly fine for a man to be alone with three or four women at that point, even though Noshim Dait and Talis were not concerned that he's going to seduce all of them, and one of them is going to end up blabbing, but here, where he's a suck of him, a Noshim, then therefore even three or four is no good. That's the point of Rashi. Tosfos says that no, from the Gemara there was mashma, that a man can't be alone with any number of women. So no, the difference is that when it was saying over here, lo yisiachet im anoshim, means even under conditions of a teirim that we said before, we said ishto imo, if his wife is there with him, then he's mutter, because he's afraid of her, but if he's a suck of im anoshim, then not, and then he's not allowed to be, then he's not allowed to be in yichud with women. Even though his wife is watching him.
But he's comfortable, he's used to it?
Because he's used to it, yeah, because he's used to being around women, and therefore there's more of a concern. Actually, the Rosh points out another thing as well. On the face of it, now you do have a concept in halacha called ba'avidite torid. Sometimes we say a person is so busy with his work that it's not going to cause him to have dihurim. A classic example of that, the Gemara mentions, is even though you're not allowed to watch animals mating because it can lead a person to dihurim, but a person who raises animals is allowed to not only watch them, but allowed to actually help them mate. It's going to give him dihurim, but Ba'avid to say tarid, he's busy with his work, and therefore he's less likely to have dihurim. You have in a similar vein, for example, you have a halacha, a man is allowed to treat women as a doctor, for example. You have mice and b'cholya, and then you have from gynecologists, for example. It's a concept of ba'avidite tarid. So you would think over here, ba'avidite tarid, and nevertheless, we're still saying it's also. Continues the Mishnah. A man should not teach his son a trade that he's going to be together with women. Now, we learned earlier in the Masechta that a father has an obligation to teach his son some kind of trade, some kind of livelihood.
All those things, yes and no's, right?
Yeah. So now we're saying, no, the job that he teaches him should l'chatchila not be one that involves having to deal a lot with women. Continues the Mishnah, in this vein, a man should always teach his son a clean and easy craft. So the Gemara is going to explain what exactly we mean by Nikiya Vakala. The Gemara is going to give an example of that, but the point is Nikiya means there's no possibility of Averis, and Kala means that it's not that hard to do. So there's no Averis involved, there's no Gezel involved, etc. In particular, Marsha explains also, you know, when you get down to it, it's supposed to be that you Torah and Kval Malachah Hanarai. It should be a person's main focus, and his day should be Torah, and he's only doing Malacha to the extent that he needs to earn a living. So therefore, a person should Lachatchil learn a kind of job that allows him to do that, that allows him lots of time for learning Torah, and the job is not like the focus of his life. And Rav Meir continues, a person needs to then daven to the one, to Hashem, to whom all wealth and all nechassim belong, because after all, there's no craft, there's no trade in the world where there's not poverty and riches. In other words, in every kind of area of business, in every line of work, there's always some rich people and some poor people. So a person shouldn't think, well, I have an umnus nikiyah v'kala, I'm guaranteed an income stream. He always needs to dive into the Eberstein, that it should be successful. And Rav Meir continues, after all, rich poverty and riches don't come as a result of the job that a person has. Everything goes according to his schus. Now, Tosfos says an interesting thing. When we say according to his schus, Tosfos says we actually mean according to his mazel, because the Gemara elsewhere mentions that boni chayu mazone depends on mazel.
Now,
what do we mean, ein mazel yisro? I'm going to say ein mazel yisro, and what does this mean then in that case? Why are we calling it schus? So there's a lot of discussion about that. It means, in other words, that it does mean, so in other words, the Rosh explains, for example, and Tosfos Reed over here explains somewhat similarly, that it means that, after all, a person's mazel can be changed by tefillah and by schosim. So therefore, in other words, so it comes through the person's mazel, but it does ultimately depend on his schos. And there's also, when we say in mazel Yisrael, there's explanations in Chassidus that mazel refers to the shodash haneshama, it refers to the chaya, in particular, it refers to the chaya of the neshama, which is lamaila, and everything for a person flows through that. So therefore, in that sense, we can say that it depends on mazel, it goes through his shodash haneshama, but that in turn depends on the level of his chaya, in turn is going to depend on his chosin. So therefore, so a person needs to daven to Hashem that he should be successful in that. Continues the Mishnah. Rav Shimon Elazar Omer. Rav Shimon Elazar says you want to see we're saying, a person has to have a job, but consider, is it really necessary to have a job in order to have parnosah? Have you ever seen a wild animal or a bird that has a job? After all, they have their parnosah without tsar. They don't have to work for a living. Now, after all, those creatures were created only to serve me. Everything in the world is created in order to make it possible for a yid to do mitzvahs, and to learn Torah and to do mitzvahs. I was created to serve my creator. So, shouldn't it be a kavachomer that I should be able to have panosa without trouble? Ella, the reason why do people have to have jobs? Shari oisei maisai, because I did wrong. You have, it goes back to the chetei tzadas. More particularly, Marsha says, we're talking about when a person does not have the attitude we said before, when he makes malachta and keva, but terose arai, when he says that his job is the focus of his life. And he forgets that his main purpose in the world is Torah. So then, v'kipachti es panasasi, and therefore I cut off, and therefore I shortened, and made my panasa bad, and therefore I have, and then because of that I have to work for a living as opposed to the animals. In other words, if a person has, so Pnei Yeshua explains, we can be talking about the chet of the Marishan before the chet etadas, then people got everything without any tzar at all. Malachim are bringing in meat and wine, as Gemara tells us in Sanhedrin, or also it can be like Marshall says, we're talking about any individual that you have. A person realizes that malacha arrived, teros hakeva, then the Eibushter gives a bracha in his malacha, and therefore even a small amount of it is enough to give him a nice panasa, as opposed to when he doesn't have the right attitude, then he has to work really hard for a living.
If he davens for it and he trusts for Hashem,
then he may not need as much. Then the Eibushter can give him a bracha where he has, well, first of all, he'll have less expenses, but also the Eibushter can give a bracha that his money goes for, yeah. that he gets more money and then it goes for. Continues the Mishnah. Speaking of what kind of jobs a person should have, Abba Gurion ish sadion omer mishum Abba Gurion lo yilamed es b'roich chamor. A man should not teach his son any of the following kinds of trades: a chamor, which is a donkey driver; gamel, or a camel driver; kader, or a kader. Now Rashi translates kader as balik chronos, which can have a couple of possibilities. It can mean somebody, we often say, like we say in the Hadron, yoshvei chronos, which means people who sit on street corners and are not doing anything useful. So later days, but here it would mean a kader in that case would be that he's selling pots, but he's also sitting there a lot of times between the selling parts and not doing anything. Or Rashi also explains that kader, bale kronos, can also mean not so much kronos, but rather kronos, which means that he owns a wagon. The point is, in other words, that when he has, why is that? A potter is going to have a wagon because he uses that to transport his pots from one place to another. Meanwhile, though, he also hires out his wagon to other people. The point is, though, that as we're going to say, that there's a certain listius, there's a certain inherent dishonesty in that kind of business, as we're going to explain in a second. So he shouldn't do that. Sapon, or a sailor; roya, or shepherd; v'chenveni, or storekeeper, in particular storekeeper. Storekeepers sell all kinds of goods. They sell wheat, they sell wine, etc. Shulmanusim, umnus listim. So Abba Gurion is saying all of these things involve robbing. when it comes to, first of all, Rashi explains, all of these people are traveling a lot. So therefore, so as they travel, for example, they go, they need, let's say, firewood. They go and collect firewood from wherever they see it, not paying attention to whether it's somebody else's property. Same thing, they collect payrus from wherever they see. They don't necessarily pay attention. They're trespassing and taking somebody else's payrus. Also, Rashi points out, another point is all of these people hire them. You hire a donkey driver or a camel driver to transport you or your packages someplace. You hire a kader, for example, you hire him to use his wagon or whatever. The point is, all of them, now you make a deal with them, and then they renege on the deal, or they charge extra, or they do different things like that. So not like, of course, we're not saying that's impossible for a person to have one of these jobs and be honest, but there's a certain, like, almost like a built-in opportunities for dishonesty over there, and therefore, if a person is teaching his son a trade, which he's supposed to do, then he shouldn't teach him one of these. And when it comes to the shepherds, also they have their animals often grazed in other people's fields. Again, you have the exceptional person who doesn't. Look, you have Avraham Avinu putting muzzles on his sheep and on his animals, but most people don't do that. On the other hand, Rabbi Yehuda,
why the Gemara teaches us not to do what not to do rather than what to do,
you always have to teach in the short possible way. You can't give a list of all the jobs you should do. There are thousands of them.
General principles.
A short list of ones that inherently involve some dishonesty.
You did learn the Gemara, whether it's almost a whole page of what you should do.
No, I don't know. Anyway, one thing is, by the way, so in this list over here, so again, we have the Chamer, Gamel, Kader, Safon. All of them, we said again, they travel a lot, and therefore they're more likely to take things that don't belong to them, and they're not honest with their business deals. The Roya, we said, also grazes his fields, his animals in other fields. As far as the Chenveni, Rashi says that often he'll go and adulterate his product. So he'll sell wine, he'll mix in some water in it without the customer realizing. He's selling grain, he's going to mix in some pebbles in it. So you're going to buy a pound of grain, you're going to come home and you're going to discover that there are some pebbles mixed in with it. And that way he's stretching his supply. So all of these things are a certain inherent dishonesty. Yeah, again, now you could say, you could list all the ones that you should do, but again, that would be a very long list. Rabbi Yehuda Omer Mishmoy. On the other hand, Rabbi Yehuda says also, now we have Abba Gurion saying in the name of Abba Gurya. So he's giving this whole list. On the other hand, Rabbi Yehuda also in the name of Abba Gurya says differently. No, don't say that everybody on this list is listing, but rather on the contrary. Hachamorin Ruben Rishoyim. True, when it comes to donkey drivers, then they're mostly Rishoyim, because again, they commonly steal from people. They don't go on such long trips, so they're not particularly afraid. So therefore, they figure they can go easy on themselves, and they can rationalize what they do wrong. On the other hand, continues Rabbi Yehuda, Hagamolin Ruben Kshevin. Camel drivers are mostly kosher people because they go on long trips through the desert and places where there's lots of different dangers from wild animals and robbers and whatever. So therefore, that makes them much more afraid, and therefore they're more in a state of tshuva. They're more in a state where they're afraid to do something wrong because they realize that Hashem is watching them and that they need Hashem's protection commonly. Asaponin Ruben Chassidim, and Rabbi Yehuda continues in the name of Abba Gurya, sailors are mostly Hasidim because they're in even greater danger than the camel drivers. So therefore, they're more likely to have Hashem on their minds. We see even, for example, look in the story of Yonah. For example, you have the whole Goyish crew of the ship. As soon as there's a storm, they're not thinking, okay, storms happen. You know, they're right away going and davening to their getchkes, and when they realize that's not working, then they realize the Eveshtik caused it, and so on and so forth. So you see, there's a perfect example of Saponim Ruben Chassidim. By the way, Rashi brings over there from the Medrash that all of after they saw what happened, then they all became Gavin. So yeah. Continues Rabbi Yehuda. the best of doctors will go to Gehenna. Now, why is that? Yeah, ouch is right. Yeah. So Rashi says, first of all, doctors are not afraid of sickness. So therefore, like this, the Eibishter put sickness in the world that people should sometimes realize they have to depend on the Eibishter. A doctor is less likely to have that mentality because he figures, I know what to do to cure this. As far as he's concerned, it's just this is minhag shel olam. It happens. People get sick. Also, Rashi says, he eats very healthy food. He's not necessarily put in a state of feeling that he has to be brokenhearted before Hashem. Then Rashi goes on to say, sometimes a doctor may actually kill with his treatments. And then Rashi says another one you could have where he has the ability to cure a poor person, but he says, look, the poor person can't pay my fee, why should I bother? So for all those reasons, so you have all those considerations that factor into this Chayv Shebarei from Lohanim. You have many, many other explanations, including that Taka, the Rashbats, one of the later Rishonim, who himself was a doctor, he talks about this and he says that particularly when we say Tov Shebaroifim, we mean the ones who are expert at their profession. So, well, first of all, he says primarily when we talk about doctors over here, he says we're talking about the kinds who do surgery. Where then the Yadayim, they may do something wrong, especially keeping in mind in those times, you know, they didn't have antibiotics, they didn't have sterilization, they didn't have all the things that we have nowadays. So therefore, it's much more likely that he's going to do something harmful without realizing it. As opposed to, he says, when you're talking about the doctor, kind of doctor who prescribes medicines or whatever, then it's not so bad. There's also an explanation that Toiv Shebaroifim particularly means one who's at the top of his profession. When he's working his way up, yeah, he's still going to realize it depends on the Eibishter, but when, like, he's the top expert in his field, he's much more likely to be arrogant about it and think that he knows it all. There is, in fact, an interesting explanation. I don't remember the mocker of it. The word Toiv is Gematria 17. So it refers to a doctor who thinks when it comes to 17 out of the 18 brachas in Shemana Esrei, yes, I have to depend on Hashem. But when it comes to Rafa'enu, I don't need that. I don't need that 18th bracha. I'm the one who heals. So then that's the one that he's the kind who goes again. So therefore, again, we're not talking about obviously a doctor can have that. He doesn't have that mentality. He can have the mentality that he's relying on Hashem constantly. That's not the kind we're talking about over here. I don't remember if Leivik has something on it, but there is lots of explanation about this before, about Torah, yeah. Anyway, continues Rabbi Huda. That kosher Shabbat Tavachim Shutvei Shalom Molek, the most kosher out of butchers, which are also shochim, they are the partners of Amalek in the sense that Rashi says. So you have, he's going to have deep cases with a suffix trefa, and he figures, what if, you know, I'm going to end up wasting my money, the animal is going to be trefa, and then I have to throw it to the dog, so therefore he's going to sell it as kosher meat, and that's a problem that he's causing Jews to eat trefas or suffix trefas. So again, we're not saying as a blanket statement, but we're saying on the whole, he's compared. Why is he compared to Amalek? So Amalek is actually called that Amlok, which means the nation that licks. Like you have a dog is constantly, like, whenever it sees a nevela, it's going to rush to try to eat it. So the same way, he finds a nevela or a trefa, and he says, you know what? I'll give it to them. I don't care. So therefore, he's called Shrutfish on Amalek, but again, what we mean is, in other words, if he does that, again, you can have a Shoychet who's a tremendous Yorah Shemayim, and would never do such a thing, obviously we're not talking about him.
He's just a worker also.
Yeah. Continues the Mishnah. Reb Nahoroi says something different. Maniach ani kol umnos shebaolam. I would set aside all the different trades in the world, the eni malamides bni ela Torah. I would teach my son only Torah. Now, is he arguing with what we said before? And in that case, is he arguing with what we said earlier in the Masechta that a father has to teach his son a trade? Or is he saying that you have what we said so far is for most people, but you have certain exceptional people that are on a higher level than that? So there's a few different explanations. Marshaw actually says that Reb Nahoroi doesn't mean you don't have to teach your son a trade. He's saying, with everything that we're saying so far, what kind of trade you need to teach your son, you need to make sure that he still has the mentality that Torah and Kevah Molachta Narai. Teach him, in other words, that Torah is the most important thing. When you say Maniach Anikol Omenos, means, in other words, you're telling him, I'm not going to teach you a trade, but realize the trade is not the most important. The trade, the business that you're going to learn is not the most important thing. So there's that. There were also explanations that Reb Pnei Yeshua talks about, that Reb Nehoroi is saying on a personal level when he says money. He says Ve'ini Menamidas Bni El Torah. He means I'm not saying this as a Horoi or Rabbim. I'm saying my son, particularly, I can see that he has exceptional gifts in Torah, and therefore I'm going to teach him only Torah, and the Eibishter will provide for him. But and then you have a lot of other Mephoshim. There's a Sichus and letters of the Rebbe that talk about in a similar vein that Reb Nehoroi is not necessarily talking about, but Hamorinam, he's talking about a higher level that certain people are zeicha to. Yeah, certain people that are, yeah, we know everybody has to make a keli for parnasa, but what their keli is going to depend. You have a person who's so exceptionally great that Hashem will provide for him without him having to do any malacha at all. You have the example of Reb Shimon Yechoi Vachaveirov, which are awesome and awesome. So then according to that, Reb Nehoroi is talking on that level. But in fact, a sicha, whether it ever points out in a footnote, you know, you have an opinion in the Gemara that Reb Meir and Reb Nehoroi are the same person, so then obviously he's not going to be arguing with himself. So rather, when Reb Meir said before that you have to teach your son a trade, he's talking about for most people, and Reb Nehoroi is talking about on this higher level that some people are zeicha to. But then again, within that itself, you can have, as Maharsha says, within the teaching the trade itself, there can also be that you're teaching him the most important thing is Torah, and everything else is secondary to it. The Sheshes Yamim Tavid can be in learning Torah as well. You know, you have an expression, the Gemara says in Sanhedrin, the Pasuk in Eiv says, Odom la'omo yula, the person is born in order to toil, in order to work hard. However, the Mishnah, the Gemara says, v'lev ashe misha mole b'torah, happy is a person whose toil is in Torah rather than in Yonei Olam. So you have certain people, certain people that can bring themselves up to a level where they're capable of their avoda, their sheshes yamim tavod, is to learn, and the Eibishter provides for them. So anyway, Reb Nehoroi continues, Sha'odim oichom ischara ba'olam azeh, a person eats from the schar of Torah in this world, va'akeren payimus le'olam abba, and the principal schar is kept for him for olam abba. So in other words, a person can get schar, a person gets a certain degree of the schar of Torah in this world, and that can include boni chayo mazon revicha, that he has plenty of parnasa. And continues Reb Nehoroi, Ush'al kol umnus enik enen kain, after all, other kinds of jobs are not like that. A person gets sick, or he gets old, or he has yisurin, and he can't do his job, then he's going to die of hunger, because then he has no way of earning money. But Reb Nehoroi continues, Torah is not like that. The Torah protects him from every bad thing when he's younger. And even when he's older and he's not able to learn Torah as much, it gives him a future and gives him a hope when he's older, because then again, he's oichol pereseyin ba'olam hazeh. The idea being, in other words, Torah is a ruchniyistik thing, so therefore it's not limited by the limitations of the body. And Reb Nehoroi continues, but now Rusa Mahu, what do you have? What pasuk can be applied to when a person is young and learns Torah? As the pasuk says, it was in this last Shabbos's Haftorah. The Koye Hashem, Yachlifu Choyach, those who hope for Hashem will renew their strength. So we see, in other words, that a person, when he learns Torah, when he's young, then Hashem gives him extra strength. And Viziknuse Mahu, what does it say when he's older? And you have the pasuk, or yinuhun v'seva, they will still be giving fruit when they're in old age, d'shein v'nananim yu, as the pasuk continues. So even when a person is too old to be learning Torah on his own, nevertheless, he still has the peiros of the Torah that he learned when he was, younger. Yinuhun means it will give fruit. The word, the shodosh niv, means to produce fruit. Yeah, it means fruit in general. So they'll still produce fruit when they're old. He's still going to be producing fruit of Torah, because again, he's still going to be mechadish kedushin. You have the Mishnah at the end of Kinim, for example, that says, Tamar Chachamim, the older they get, the wiser they get. But it means also, here we're talking about a gashmiistic level, that he'll still have the peiros of the schar of his Torah to sustain him when he's old. And the Reb Nehoroi continues, V'cheinu oyma b'Avram, we find by Avram, V'Avram zokin, that Avram was old, V'Hashem derechas Avram bakol, and Hashem blessed him with everything. So even when he was old, because he had learned Torah his whole life, then therefore he was zoicha to brachas when he was old, when he was in his old age. And what sinu she'osa Avraham Avinu as kol haTorah kula ad shelo nitna, we find that Avraham did the whole Torah before it was even given. As the pasuk says, Eikev asher shama Avraham b'kodi, because Avraham listened to my voice, vayishma mishmarti, and he guarded my guarding of Torah, mitzvosai chukosai v'seroisai, in the various categories of mitzvahs, chukim, and Torah. The Gemara in Yuma, by the way, expands on that and says, you have a famous thing over there where it says that Avraham kept even eight of tafshilin, that Avraham kept even all the mitzvahs that Rabbanan, that he figured them out logically even though they hadn't been given yet. So he was saying, in a similar vein, that we see that Avraham did all of that throughout his whole life, and the Eibushter gave him schar for that. Marsha points out over here, we said before, Bonei Chaya Mezonah comes mitzad mazel, what we find by Avraham, that Hashem tells him that you're higher than the mazalis. So the same way, when a person is looting Torah and doing mitzvahs, then he's higher than mazel, then he's higher than any limitations of gashmius, and any limitations of ruchnius, and the Eibushter provides for him. Let me just say something. They never made a number of hadronim on Masech the Kiddushin over the years. In one of them, in Chelek Lamed Hey, actually, that ever focuses on this last part over here, we're saying Matsinu Sha or Osa Avraham Avinu Satora, where you have in Yuma, the expression is Kiyam Avraham Avinu Satora, and there is a statement of Rav. So why does Rav need to make the statement if we already have it in our Mishnah? And the Rebbe develops the idea over there that there are different aspects of doing Torah. There can be that he's doing before he's mitzvah v'oise. There can be doing that he's doing the mitzvahs on the level like we Jews do after Matan Torah, which is where Hashem gave it to us as a tzivui, and we're connecting to Hashem on a higher level. And then the Rebbe goes on to develop in that sicha the whole point over there of what it means that Avraham not only also, it means also he did them in the sense that he was mamshich them into our world in a way that now when we do our mitzvahs nowadays, we're doing them because Hashem gave them on Har Sinai, but we still benefit from the fact that Avraham first brought that into the world.
And that means in the Bible with Shabbos, that the Shema that comes down to is only an Ara.
Mm-hmm.
And by us, after Latin Torah, by us learning, we're giving to our back, returning, and we're taking from our real neshama above.
Yep. Yeah, so that's also when we mentioned before about the chaya, which is part of the neshama that stays above. That's part of what it means, the mazel. So yes, so it also includes that point. But yeah, that we're bringing down the shodash neshama into our world. Yeah, and we're accomplishing something with that. Yeah. Yeah.
What's the difference between Desha and Peri? The Kalim using the Lashon, it's different from usual. Why is that?
Between the Lashon Peri and what?
Deshinu, it says.
Verananimu. Deshinu actually means fat. The word Deshin literally means like you have the ashes left over on the Mizbeach, the fatty ashes. The word Deshin, the Shodesh Deshin, means to be fat. So Deshinim Rananimu means they'll be fat and they'll be full of sap and freshness. But here the Mishnah had quoted only the first half of the pasuk. Yinuvun means they will produce fruit. They will blossom and they will produce fruit. So in that sicha, then the Rebbe develops the point that this goes with what Rav Nehoroi is saying about maniach anikol umnus shabatosh ba'olam. He's saying, in other words, that when a person has that level of bitochen, then he can teach his son only Torah. So and in the same way that goes with what we're saying, Avraham Avinu also is called matzino she'osa Avraham Avinu is called Torah kula, that Avraham was on that level where even though now Avraham did have a job, he was a shepherd, but nevertheless that Hashem beirach has Avraham Makol, and Hashem gave him a much greater shaloyla erech of what he would have accomplished b'derech hateva as a shepherd because of the Torah that he learned from the mitzvahs that he did. So therefore, that fits with what Rav Nehoroi is saying. Okay, so the Gemara starts off. Tana Rabbanan. Now we said at the beginning of the Mishnah, we said kol sha'asok of him anoshim. Anybody who does business that involves that he's around women a lot. So we said he's not allowed to be in yichud with women, and we said Rashi says it means he's not allowed to be even with many women, even though usually he shouldn't be allowed, even though he usually would have been allowed, and Tosfos says it means even if ishter ima, he's not allowed to. So what are such jobs? Tana Rabbanan, kol sha'asok of him anoshim, anybody who does business with women, suroi ra, his minhag is a bad one. His, Rashi says the word surai means minhogei ra. It means his normal way of acting is a bad one. Now again, of course, a person could overcome it. We had an example earlier in our Masechta where a kahana was selling baskets to women for a living, and then when one goyish woman propositioned him, he jumped off the roof to avoid her. And when the yo comes to save him, then he says, the only reason I got in this situation in the first place is because I'm having to do such a degrading job selling baskets to women. And Leo gives him a whole basket full of gold coins so he doesn't have to work for a living again. So the point, when we say surah ra, again, we don't mean every single person like that, but it means they have a tendency to be bad. Literally surah, it actually explains, like you have in this week's parasha, for example, by a suru ela, by a vayu abesa. So it means, in other words, like being close with him and coming to his house, you're more likely to be influenced negative. So what are these asokim and anoshim? You're going to have surfing. For example, goldsmiths, because they make jewelry for women. Vasarikim, people who comb out and press clothing for women. So of course they're doing a lot of business with women. Vahanakuris, people who clean millstones, because we're talking about over here. Rashi says small millstones that are used. Now you have large millstones are turned by water or they're turned by animals or whatever. Those women are not necessarily involved with. But we're talking about a small household handmill, then a woman is usually going to be the one who operates that, and every so often has to be cleaned out because it needs to have a rough surface in order to do its job. So every so often you need to call somebody in to clean it. So such a person is a stock of a manoshim. The Reuchlin, peddlers, because they're selling cosmetics and perfumes for women. Vahagardim, weavers, because they're weaving clothes for women. Vasaparim, barbers, because children, sure, women bring their boys to him for haircuts.
Which person say midbar?
Midbar? What? Sapar means a barber.
Right, because the word similar, which means the woods, that means the...
No, you're thinking of sfar, it means like border. Sfar means the border, but saparin means haircutters, barbers. Vahakovsim, laundry men, because they're doing laundry for women. Vahagora, and bloodletters. So all of them, have a lot of their business involves women, and therefore that's what we say, they're called shasakar manashim. Also vahabalan, also bathhouse attendants. Vahaburski, and tanners. Why tanners, in fact, on the face of it, Rashi doesn't explain why tanners, but Pashto's idea is because he's making, for example, leather shoes for women to wear. Pashto's, he's tanning a leather, and then he's also selling finished leather goods, and women are coming by them. Yeah. Furthermore, another thing about all the people on this list, you're not allowed to appoint any of them as a Kohen Gadol or a king. And in fact, there are a few of the Rishonim who the Yad Ramah brings, and it seems from the Rambam as well, that there's actually two separate lists over here. You have a list of people that are Sokim and Manashim, and then you have the last few on the list, the bloodletter, the barber, the bathhouse attendant, and the tanner. Those are not so much that I suck of them, I'm not sure, but those are degrading jobs, and therefore a Kohen Gadol or a king shouldn't be appointed. The Gemara says, my timer, loy mishum depsili, not because intrinsically they're apostle, ela mishum dezilo munasayu, but because they do a very degrading job. So therefore, nobody's going to have any respect for them. In fact, the Rambam says that even if they do such a job for one single day, then already that passes them. Not just they're doing it sam as practice or whatever, but if they actually do it, they were hired to do the job for even one day, then they're possible in the future to be appointed to these positions. Again, that may not necessarily apply to everybody on the list over here. It may only apply to the last few, the bloodletter, the bathhouse attendant, and the tanner. I think that Amnon also brings, maybe in that connection, the barber. We find, for example, Haman was a barber for many years, and then he became prime minister, but other than that, yeah. Okay. Obviously, Ahasuerus wasn't following Halacha in that. Continues the Gemara. Since we're talking about a bloodletter, so Tonan Abanan, Asoda Dvarim Nemru Begorah. There are 10 things that Chachamim said regarding a blood letter. That again, he has, we said before, he has bad tendencies. We said he's an example of Asok of Imanoshim. He regularly does business with women, and that creates problems as far as Yichud. But in addition, there are a number of things where he shows that he has bad midas. Mahalech al tzidai, he walks on his side, which means, in other words, like he walks like with his head held high and like in a gaivadik way. And the idea being, in other words, that this and the next couple of things. So Rashi explains he basically he's a baal gaiva because there's three different things we're going to describe in which ways that he's a baal gaiva. The point is Rashi says because people give over their lives to him, people come to him for bloodletting, and he has their lives in his hands, so therefore he becomes proud of himself and thinks that he's a know-it-all. Obviously, again, we're not saying every single person. You have a Gemara in Tainus, for example, that mentions a bloodletter named Abba Umna in the times of Abaye and Rava, where the Gemara tells over there about the exceptional things that he would do. He would, when poor people came to him, not only he wouldn't charge them, he would give them money afterwards to go and get themselves something to eat. He was very careful as far as tzniyus with his female patients, and so on. He was a big Baal Tzedakah, and so on and so forth. And the Gemara says he would receive a greeting every single day from the Masivta Derkiya. Every single day, a voice would come from Shemayim greeting him and saying, Shalom Aleichem. So it seems that he's an exceptional person. But we're saying the regular run of such people. So again, the Halach al Tzidei, he walks on his side, and I was in a Gaivetic way. The Ruchai Gasa, Bechlal, he acts as Baal Gaiva. The Nitla, the Yoshev, when he's sitting, he won't sit just like on a bench or something. He's only going to sit only if he has something to lean against. So like he leans back in his chair, like the way a Baal Gaiva does. The Einet Sora, so those three things are things of Gaiva, again, because as Rashi says, he has people give over their lives into his hand, so that makes him a Baal Gaiva. The Einet Sora, he's cheap, because what happens when people let blood, afterwards they have to eat something in order to restore their strength, and therefore, usually, so you're going to have some food, and you're going to invite the bloodletter to join you. So like he's used to, he doesn't have to spend money on himself, he can eat from other people. So therefore, he becomes stingy. The Einei Ra, he's also, he has a bad eye on people. Like, in other words, he's always, he's hoping, I can't wait till people get sick and they have to come to me. They did it regularly in those days. It was considered like a cure for many different diseases. So therefore, so he's always hoping, I can't wait till I have more patients. So yeah, that's the Einei Ra. The next thing is he eats a lot, because again, he eats by a lot of different people after they have their blood let. Even when he goes to the bathroom, he doesn't produce very much, because the food that he eats is like very healthy food, because people make sure to have very healthy food for after they let blood. So therefore, like most of it gets digested, and there's very little waste. What's wrong with having very little waste, doesn't say, but, you know, we find, for example, it says about a mosquito, that machnes vein in mosi, that it takes in, it doesn't give out, so it's used in chassidus as like a metaphor for stinginess. Even that waste that it doesn't need, it won't bother sharing with the rest of the world. So maybe the Gemara means it in that sense over here, yeah. Next, the choshed al arayas. Such a person is suspect about arayas because, again, women come to him for bloodletting, and there's possibilities of yichud and other things like that. The Yad Ramah points out also that, look, you know, he has to tell her to roll up her sleeve or to bare her arm or whatever in order to do the bloodletting, and then he starts looking and, yeah. So he's choshed on that. Val a gezel and about stealing, because many times, Rashi explains, women will come to him for bloodletting, and how are they going to get the money? They don't necessarily have money of their own for spending on it, so they're going to take from their husbands without their permission, and he doesn't check to make sure that the money is kosher or geld. And in particular, Rav Yaakov Emden actually explains that especially when women are pregnant, then they need it more. And when they're not pregnant, he says apparently bloodletting helps their fertility. So therefore they're more prone to go and say, I need the money no matter what, and then rationalize to themselves if they have a valid reason to take it out of their husband's wallet, and then he doesn't check on that. About shvichos damim, and also he's suspect on shvichos damim because he may take out so much blood that the person has barely enough to live on. The Gemara mentions in other places that a person needs a minimum of a revius of blood to survive. So what happens? He might take out so much blood, Rashi explains, that he actually ends up taking out the person that has less than a revius, and therefore the bloodletting kills them. So therefore he's choshed on shvichos damim for being careless about that. Actually, the Yad Ramah says you don't even need that, even if he's not getting the person down to a revius. He may take more blood than is necessary. So therefore, so you have that. Okay. getting back to, we said in the Mishnah, we said that a person should always teach his son a clean and easy craft. So, Dorash Bakapara, La'ulam Yilamid Onimus, Umnis Niki Bakala, Maihi, what is an example of an Umnis Niki Bakala? Omer of Yehuda, Machta, the Talmud Yosa, it means needles for embroidery. So it can mean to learn how to do embroidery if Nikia, in the sense that there's no gezel involved, and it's kala in that it's easy to do. On the other hand, the Tosfos Rid points out, if you're talking about embroidery itself, won't that be a sukkah of anoshim? Who else are you embroidering for if not for women? And so he explains, it doesn't mean the actual embroidery work itself, it means making the needles for it. So that's not a sukkah of anoshim, and it's a very easy and clean thing to do. You find, for example, Rabbi Yeshua used to make needles for a living.
Fire.
You have to use fire, but it's still relatively Nakia of a Kala. It's still Nakia of a Gezel, and Kala is relatively easy. And the Gemara continues, Tanya Rebbe Omer, Eimacho Umnus Shreveres Mina Olam. The fact is, there's no job that ever goes away from the world. The fact is, not ever, but the point is, there's no job, and it was every job that they know in a given time is always needed. Somebody has to be doing every kind of job. Ashim, Misharoyas, Horav, Ba'umnus, Ma'ula, but happy is a person who sees his parents, and for that matter, his children. Rashi says also, in a clean craft, in a good kind of job, the kind that we were saying before, that the kind that a person should have. In fact, Maushal says, in other words, even, for example, what a person had, that his ancestors were doing some kind of job, which is not an umnas nakia, but he himself maybe has an umnas nakia, but ochen vei to him that he has to see his parents working in an umnas she'en nakia. Because the fact is, then that makes it hard for him to learn a new job. And, so woe to a person who sees his parents in a degrading job. Again, because even if he himself does better, but the fact is that it makes it harder for him.
After the war.
After the war, yeah, of course. Yeah, you have a job as a job, yeah. For example, Rebbe says, EF Shalom Bled Basim Bled Burski, and the world can't exist without spice sellers and without tanners, but the spice smellers smell good and the tanners the other way around. Ashri Mishal Munuse Basim, yet happy is the person whose job is to sell spices, but Oilan Mishal Munuse Burski, woe to the person whose job is to be a tanner where he smells bad. So even though the world needs tanners, but Ochen Vey that you have to be dafka the one. Similarly, he says, EF Shalom Boys Sforum of Lonakavis, the world can't exist without boys and girls. Ashley Misha Bonav Sforum, happy is the person whose children are boys, but Olam Misha Bonav Nakavis, woe to the person whose children are daughters. Now, where it means, now, what does it mean? The fact is that there is a good thing to have daughters. You need to prove who, and Bas Tila Simon Yafalabonim. So there's a lot of different explanations. It means, in other words, that, it means that the boys are acting like girls and not acting the way that boys should as far as getting a job and as far as being strong in the world or whatever. It can mean that he has only girls and no boys. He's not even Yotze Pruvu. And the fact is that the fact is that he's not Yotze the mitzvah, and girls are more of a worry to their parents because of what's going to be with them. So Pruvu, you can be Yotze. This Shammai says two boys is enough. The Sibyl says you need one boy and one girl, and the Halacha is like the Sibyl. Anyway. Continues the Braisa. Rav Meir says, like he said in the Mishnah, a person should always teach his son a clean and easy trade. A person still has to daven to Hashem for rachnim, to the one to whom riches and wealth belong. Because poverty and riches don't come from a person's trade. It all belongs to the one to whom wealth belongs. The positive says, Hashem says, mine is the silver and the gold. So no matter what job a person has, even if it's umnas nikiya v'kala, he has to realize that he depends on the Eibishter. Now, we said in the Mishnah of Shimon Alazar Imram Isami Amecha, you ever see an animal that has a job, so how come they don't need jobs and we do? So Tanya, we learn in a Braisa. Rav Shimon Alazar Imram, Yomer Lo Isi Tzvi Kayot, I never saw a deer that was drying figs for a living, the Ari Sabol, or I never saw a lion as a porter carrying heavy burdens, the Shur Chenveni, I never saw a fox being a storekeeper. Why is the Gemara mentioning these things? So Mefarshim explained that a deer, the Medrash says, never actually sleeps. It always sleeps with one eye open. For that reason, it's used as a metaphor for the Eibishter watching us. The Pasuk says in Shir HaShirim, because a deer always sleeps with alertness, with one eye open. And the same way the Eibishter is always supervising and watching us. So a deer, therefore, would be the ideal one to watch fruit drying in the field, making sure nobody's going to steal it. A lion being strong would serve well as a porter. A fox being smart, being a sly, cunning animal, would be good as a storekeeper. But nevertheless, we see they don't have those jobs. The hem is spanish in shaloi b'tzar, and they have their parnosa without any trouble. The hem le nivru el l'sham sheni, they were created only to serve me. V'ani nivresi the shamash es koini, I was created to serve my creator, Hashem. So, Uma Elush, the Nivru, Elisham Shani, Madhafi's animals were created only to serve me, Spanus and Shalabit Tsar, and Hashem gives them their Parnasa without Tsar. They don't have to be drying figs or running stores or whatever. I was created to serve Hashem in a dinsha Spanish Shalabit Tsar. Shouldn't it be a Kavachoma that I have my Parnasa without Tsar? Ela Shaharit Osis. Because, as we said in the Mishnah, I ruin my ways, which can either mean the chete tadat, or it can mean an individual person who doesn't have the right attitude in life, and therefore I cut off my parnasa. Shanema, as we find in the Pasuk, as the Pasuk says, your averis have turned away Hashem's goodness from you. Like this, Hashem wants to give you so much good, and your averis are turning it away. There's a sicha in Chelik Tesdayin, also Chelik Tesvod, rather, also a hadron on Masechta Kedushin, where the Rebbe goes and analyzes in greater detail this business of these various animals and the various jobs we're saying that conceivably they could have. And the Rishami also mentions another one, a wolf selling pots. And the Rebbe goes and analyzes in great detail what all this means in Avodah and why the Yerushalmi has that one and the Babli does not. One thing the Rebbe points out is these three jobs, not just for saying these animals are uniquely suited for them, like we said, but also they represent three different ways in which you need to transform something for Avodah Hashem. Sometimes you have the actual object itself needs to be transformed from one thing into another, like fresh figs into dry ones. That's symbolized by the deer. Then you have sometimes the thing itself is already ready, but it needs to be brought from point A to point B. That's represented by the lion, who's the porter, carrying it from point A to point B. And sometimes you need a shinu reshus. Sometimes it needs to be changed from one reshus to another. For example, we have the concept that the lands of Amun and Moav, the wolf limits to Jews until Sichin conquered them, and then Amun and Moav taru b'Sichin. So that's represented by the fox, the storekeeper, who takes something out of one reshus and then sells it and sells it into another reshus. So each of these represents a different stage in Avodah. And he goes on to explain over there what the fox with his, what the wolf with his pots would represent. It represents that, for example, you could eat meat without cooking it, but then you can have that you have a better way of doing it. You have a hidur mitzvah. So selling pots represents the concept of hidur mitzvah, and the Babli and the Rishami are arguing essentially over the point how important is hidur mitzvah. Is it more important to do the mitzvah itself, even if you might be lacking in hidur? Is it better to do the hidur, even if it means that the mitzvah might be delayed? And the Rebbe talks about l'shitas, say, we would find such things. Fascinating, fascinating, very deep sicha. Continues the Mishnah. The Mishnah had finished off. Rav Nehoroy Emaniyah Hani Kol Bo Minuschola. Rav Nehoroy said, "I would leave aside all the different jobs in the world and teach my son only Torah." So Tanya, we learn in a Blaise. Rav Nehoroy Emaniyah Hani Kol Bo Minuschola. I would set aside all the different trades in the world. The Eni Malamedes Bni El Torah. I would teach my son only Torah. Shekol Bo Minuschola. En Emedes VaEla Bimei Yalbusay. Because similar to what he said in the Mishnah, any job that a person has only helps him when he's young. The person gets old and he's hungry because he has no job to sustain. The Torah is not like that. It stands by a person when he's young, and it gives him a hope and a future when he's old. When a person is young, the Pasuk describes that those who hope for Hashem and learn Torah and do mitzvahs, they renew their strength and they develop new wings like the eagles. And what does it say when a person is old? They will still give fruit when they're old. They'll be full of fat and fresh. So a person has that freshness when he learns Torah, even when he's old and he can't learn Torah anymore. Still, the source of it that he learned when he was younger helps him out. There's a letter that Eber once wrote in the Hadron for Kiddushin to a group that was learning the Sefer Kiddushin, where he analyzes, there's also Sicha actually, with a version of that as a Sicha in Chedek Tesdayin, where that Eber analyzes in some detail. So first of all, the Braise is basically repeating what it said in the Mishnah, and usually you have the other way around. The Mishnah usually says things briefly, and the Braise expands on them. Here we have the other way around. The Mishnah mentioned that the person might be old or sick or have Yisurin. The Braise only mentions him being old and a number of other differences. And the gist is that Eber explains that if you have in the times of the Mishnah, people were on a higher ruchniistical level. By the time of the Braisa, already the next generation, they're already on a lower level. So therefore, like a person might think to himself, sickness, Yisurim, who cares? I might not get sick. I might not have Yisurim. Why is it important for me to know? But old age, anybody is going to realize that eventually old age catches up with a person. And then the Eber explains a number of different nuances in the Mishnah and the Braisa similarly with those things. And then by the Eber ends up connecting, we know when you make a siyum on a masechta, it's often a common thing. You connect it with the beginning of the masechta. So the beginning of the masechta was ha'isha niknes b'shalosh drachim, that there's three ways of accomplishing kiddushin, kesef, shtar, and biya. Now, here Rav Nehorai is talking about teaching his son Torah, which means also teaching him the proper attitude towards Torah. That's the most important thing in a person's life. Now, The Rambam explains that when you start teaching a kid Torah, you can't right away start by teaching him that you're learning Lishma. He's not going to be able to grasp that. You start by telling him about Gashmi sticker rewards he'll get for it. He'll get a sticker when he's little. He'll get a candy. He'll get a whatever kind of prize. Eventually you train him to realize that with that, he'll come closer to the Eidishter, which is a reward in itself. And eventually you teach him Lishma. That's beyond even that you're doing it in order to L'chaya or L'mabah, that you're doing it purely Lishma. So that's reflected in those three things. Kesef is money, it refers to the first stage of Chinuch. Shtar is, we said, the shtar itself doesn't have to have an intrinsic value. It just has that it says on it, Hariat Mekudeshesli. So that represents the mentality when a person is learning Torah in order to get Chaya Olam Haba or other such things like that. And then Bia, which is the actual close connection, the Bahayul of Asa Echa between husband and wife, that refers to the level where a person reaches, the highest level, where he's learning Torah to be close with Hashem and for no other reason. So therefore, so that connects with it. Rav Nehorai is saying that he's going to teach his son to go through these three stages and to emerge with that he learns that Torah is the most important thing in his life, and everything else, and umnus, even if he needs an umnus, it may not matter that the most important thing is Torah, and the Eibishter will provide for him. Hadron alach asar yuchsin of slikol amasechta kedushin. Mazel tov, everyone.